Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid?
What? I'm good. What is the White Devil saying?
He's doing good. He's getting into a routine of regular morning running. So I get up at 7 a.m. and I cause a fuss about that. I think that's too early for a person to get up. I'm used to my 8 o'clock wake-ups over here in Amsterdam. So I've been getting up every morning at 7, heading out for a run for 70 minutes. That's my morning old goal, is 70-minute run. And if I fancy running hard on that 70 minutes, I will. If I don't, I'll just jog it. And it's good. I'm getting it back a bit fit. This morning I did one. I was running sort of some 3:40-minute Ks at one stage. Didn't feel too bad. Did some strides. So, yeah, the big half. The big half of like running is going to be all right.
Okay. You might beat me then. You might beat me.
Yeah. And have you done your 10K for the 10K challenge? I'm challenging you to, mate, that we announced last week.
I'm working on it.
Working on it? We've got to get it done by the end of, well, by the time this podcast is out, you should have run 10K. So I've got mine scheduled for Sunday. We're recording at the end of the week. Mine's Sunday morning in Vondel Park in Amsterdam. We're going to run a 10K. I'm looking.
I tell you what, I'll go out today on Strava.
Okay, it's done. So if you are, Jermaine will get it done. It's all right. It doesn't have to be fast as long as your next 10K before Feb 7th is faster.
That's sandbag the first one. That's it.
Had some really nice feedback from last week's show. We obviously interviewed Wendy Sly. She talked a lot about 1984, the iconic race in the Olympics, her silver medal, and had some 10K tips. And if you haven't listened to that, go back and have a listen. Hear about our 10K challenge. Hopefully you guys are taking part and hopefully you've got an idea of when you're going to do that, hopefully soon. So that was really good feedback. But what have you been up to, Jermaine, other than forgetting to go for your 10K run? What have you been doing?
I have been doing some jogging.
Yeah.
So keeping it at half hour. Yeah. You know, casual. Because I don't want to come dead last.
Okay,
you
know? Yeah.
But obviously I've been working. Loads of crazy stuff. I've got a backlog of stories. But this one, driving along, people are getting on. This guy gets on. He's black. He's got blonde hair. It looks like Demolition Man, you know?
Yeah, get it? Yeah.
He's got a suede jacket, big gold chain, and he's got a little briefcase. I'm like, okay. And then he goes, "Yo, big man, let me on. I'm going 2 stops. I'm like, what? I said, no pass, no travel. And he starts kissing his teeth, pulls out his wallet. He's got about $3,000 in cash all stuffed in his wallet. And then he gets out his bank card and pays.
Yeah.
I get annoyed with some people. It's like they just try and take the piss.
But he was a big man. He was probably from the future, wasn't he?
But it's like, you don't go to a supermarket and go, "Oh, I don't want all these potatoes, but let me just take one of them." Yeah, it's like things that make me go mad. It's like people put their hand out, and you stop, and then they go, "Oh, I ain't got a pass." You're like, "Whoa, you want the pass, but you ain't got no money to pay."
It should be a regular feature. Jermaine's gripes about bus travel. You've got to pay. Get the card out, everybody. Don't be messing around on Jermaine's bus. Okay? The thing is, you can walk 2 stops. What's he doing getting the bus for?
Well, when they say 2 stops, it doesn't mean 2 stops. It means like whole journey.
Okay, right, okay.
But like, you can see people when they genuinely made a mistake and their Oyster's not working or their card's been blocked. Then I go, "Oh, don't worry about it."
Yeah.
But when they purposely come on and they had no intention to pay, that's when it's like, that's a step too far.
I love the way he tried to butter you up. Big man. Hey, big man. Let me see. Look at my legs. I'm skinny man, as you'd be saying. Yeah.
Maybe he was looking at my belly.
Nice one. So obviously you're getting ready for the big half. If anyone hasn't heard about this, we are doing a challenge, Battle of the Podcasts. I'll put something out on social media about it. We are racing off against a series of other podcasts, one of which being Cloud259, the guys over there, good friends of the show. And a House of Run over in America are also getting involved. There's a few others getting involved, so I'll put out some more information about that soon.
Do we know any research on these other podcasters?
Well, I know Greg's just gone sub 3. recently. I know, okay. And Coast Bren's not far off that, I think. So they're around that level. So probably, yeah, it's going to be competitive. They're two solid runners, those two. House of Run, I know the guys, they're more shorter distance. I'm not sure if those guys are really, well, they're more 5K and above, but I'm not sure how their half marathon game is, but we'll see. I think we're all right. But we've also... They can wing it. We've got... obviously, we're facing off Farrow as well. Mo Farrow, we've got him to worry about because he's been announced. So, yeah, I was looking for the win.
It's $4,000 for first.
Is it?
See, okay. The prize money.
That's why.
And it goes down £1,000 for fourth. He's probably getting an entry fee.
Okay. Appearance fee.
Appearance fee.
So it'd be nice to race up against him, though. That'd be nice. I remember being in races with Farrow before. Like, I remember there was one in 10K. Like, you know, what's that? Is it Booper 10K? I think it's called Vitality 10K now. And you always get those people who try and sneak into the elite start and try and start next to him and try and shake his hand and try and take photos. And it's just like, it's fine if you want to do that. But if everyone does it, it makes it so hard to run. Because then the first 200 meters, they get flattened. You know what I mean? Like, everyone goes, because they're not fast enough to keep up with the first 200 meters. So they basically take a space that someone could be running into. Yeah, anyway, that's my rant. If you're not,
are we going to be on elite start?
We are going to be in the championship start, I think. But we'll see. We'll see.
Okay. Anyway, yeah. Okay. That's fine. I'll wear basketball shorts or something. I'll be in disguise.
Yeah. And on this week, so talking of Farrah, obviously he's announced for the London Marathon coming up as well as the big half. We want to talk about the future of the sport. So we were talking on this week's show, the interview is with John Downs. So John is a cross-country runner, well, he's a track runner, cross-country runner, and he's a very vocal critic of the governing bodies over here in the UK. So we're going to talk to John more about that now in the interview. But we wanted to have a little start off by thinking about sort of the future of the sport and where it's going, and if there's a problem with our sport, and looking at... like the standard of where we're going, things are improving a bit. So like the London Marathon is a good case in point. Like, look at the elite field on the men's side. Excitingly, Andy Vernon's going to make his debut. There's Callum Hawkins, you know, Mo's a case in point. He's not really, it's hard to place him in terms of sort of British athletics and the strength, because he's a bit of an outlier. But so he's doing it. There's Andrew Davis, there's Johnny Mellor. We've got a few good guys in the men's side. Probably missed somebody. Sorry if I have. And then obviously Charlotte Perdue and Lily Partridge. They're both going for the women. We've got a couple of others. We've got our excellent interviewee, or beginning a couple of months, weeks ago, Hayley Carruthers in there. We've got Tracy Barlow, Sonia Samuels. So, I mean, it's a tough one, because there are signs that, you know, we are improving. The general levels in the UK are improving, but as a sport, you know, where are we going? It's like the last Stirling cross country, which was last week, there was very few competitors. Like, there was, I think there's 18 women in the women's elite race. There was hardly anyone there. And it's like, what do you think? Like, because you talk about the British League and things have changed there quite a lot.
Well, yeah, like most track people, they evolve from doing British League. Yeah. And then obviously you get into it, and then you start doing BMCs. But now, like British League, what they've done, they're doing this year, they're merging men's and women teams together. So for those people that don't know British League, you turn up and it'll take about 5 hours.
Yeah.
If you stay the whole day for everyone in your team to do every single event, and there's two people doing every single event.
Yeah.
Now they want to do that, men's and women's together. So it's going to be like, yeah, wouldn't say 10 hours, but it's going to be great. It's going to be stupid long.
Yeah.
So, less people go to British leagues because it's like it's a whole day wasted.
Yeah.
And more people go to BMCs because they think, okay, I can go after work. It's only going to be 2 hours. So, if British League, I know some teams like Kent AC, Newquay and Par, they've left the British League. Is other teams will follow because they don't want to merge. They won't have enough people to commit.
Yeah.
And endurance runners will be okay because they've got BMCs. But throwers and sprinters won't.
Yeah.
Because unless they do a sprinting version or a throwing version of the BMC, they won't have competitive competitions regularly.
Yeah. And this is the thing with kids, isn't it? The kids want, you know, when I was a kid, I love competing. I love getting out and doing races and the atmosphere, watching the seniors compete and that sort of thing. And if that's not happening, if people can't be bothered, then kids aren't going to stay in the sport. There's too many other distractions for it.
But they want to make it interesting, but they think the way of make it interesting is sort of like stick it all together. But all that makes it is longer.
I think we talk about this with John in the interview, but like the Diamond League, right? All the Diamond League races, they're all like one evening, bang, 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 few events. Like you watch them on telly, it's super exciting because there's never a dull moment, right? The British version of it, which is the Anniversary Games, whatever they call it, is so boring. It's so boring. I've been to watch it in the stadium and it's like, this should be exciting, but it's boring. Because they try and do loads of it and they spread it out over 2 days because they try and think, we'll get more. We'll get some Paralympics.
They want more money.
They want more money.
They want it. Yeah. They want for entry fee. They want more money, and then obviously,
we'll get para events in it, and that's all. Stuff is great, but they just do it so it's just so boring.
A good example is the British Championships. It used to be called the Free Days.
Yeah,
and if you look like Harry Staines, he showed me videos when he was running, and it was at Crystal Palace. It was like 5,000 people watching.
Yeah.
Now. Because they want to push, you know, make some. They're charging like £30 a ticket. You don't even get 1,000 people coming to watch.
And it's funny. Like I love watching athletics on TV, but it's now. I know it's now red button or something. You don't necessarily get it live on TV, and I guess that's just because no one's watching it. But you think there's so many mediums through which to watch, like TV now. Do you know what I mean? Like the British trial, like. Liverpool, fantastic race. Like, that should be broadcast. That should be even, like, British Athletics should, you know, take the hit and put it on some, I don't know, pay for it to be filmed and put it on some kind of channel. Do you know what I mean? Just to have it available that you could,
that you,
watch.
Yeah, that you could stream on your phone.
Yeah.
and then people watch it, yeah.
It sounds stupid, but like, this, I always think the thing of, they always say of football, like it's what people want. It's what, you know, on radio and on TV, you know, we're only giving people what they want. Yeah, but you're just basically you're giving them. They're watching it because that's what you're giving them. You know what I mean? If you gave them other opportunities to watch different stuff, they might watch other stuff. You know, in a way, to a certain extent, I don't care that athletics not a popular sport. I don't want athletics to be football. But you look at it in comparison to like triathlon, where like there's quite a vibrant scene. Clubs are awash with money. Like loads of clubs in London who've got more money. That they know what to do with. Do you know what I mean? Like it's a sport that they're doing stuff. They're trying things. People want to be triathletes. People see Johnny Brownlee and that sort of thing. And we've had that in a way with Mo has been like at the top of the scene. But it's no one's taking advantage of that. No one's pushing people into athletics clubs, and it just hasn't worked, does it? I don't know. I probably don't know enough about it to make a proper judgment. I think John does. So I mean, John will come in a minute and talk more about it. And perhaps we'll go over to John now. Here he is. So on this week's show, we are talking to John Downes. How are you, John? All right?
I'm very good, mate. Thanks for asking.
Good to have you on.
Top of the morning. Top of the morning.
Jermaine, that's the worst that's Irish accent we've ever heard.
You got sorted out, geezer. You got
that's a good Cockney one.
Yeah, all right. Come on.
So, John, you're a vocal member of the running scene. How did you originally get started in running? What was the spark for you that got you interested in the sport?
Well, I obviously started in Ireland,
yeah.
But really, straight up, the main reason I got into running was bullying in school, to be honest. And I just found it when I got really frustrated with it, what was going on in my life. At that time, I used to just run. And the more I ran, the faster I ran, the better I felt.
Yeah.
So I obviously got spotted by a local bank manager who was with an athletic club. And he asked me to run for his club. It was a club called Croom Athletic Club. It's a town as you're going towards Limerick City.
Yeah.
And I ended up running for him. The first race I ran was the county championships. I won it. Really, no training, no structured training at all. I just used to run.
Yeah.
And then I went to the South of Ireland Cross Country Championships, ran that, won that. And then I went to my first All-Irelands up in Monaghan, in a place called Clonus. And I finished ninth. Really, after that, I found I was good at something. It helped me deal with the bullying.
Yeah.
And I never really looked back after that, to be honest.
Wow. And what strengths did you have, do you think, that suited running, perhaps, other than kind of getting out and losing yourself a bit? What strengths did your personality have that made you good
at it? I suppose my best trait is this never give up attitude, I suppose. I didn't mind pain. I didn't mind hardship. You know, it was going back to a young boy, I suppose, we grew up and everything we had to do around here, you had to do for yourself. You know, I was working from the age of 7 or 8. And that might sound strange, but it was very common here. You'd go in and work with a local farmer. You'd have to pike out cow dung. You'd have to bring in the hay. You'd have to pick stones out of a ploughed field. So you kind of had to use yourself. So hardship wasn't a problem. And I think with a lot of people today, they all want to be the best, but they're not prepared to be the worst along the way to be the best. I ran some good races and I got absolutely annihilated in some races, but I didn't mind that because in my head, I kind of knew where I wanted to go. I suppose the best trait I got is I just don't back down. I don't give up. You know, you haven't me beat until you have me beaten is the kind of attitude I got very early, I suppose.
Yeah. Just to clarify, you were the victim and not the bullier.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I know you're a bruiser. Yeah. You're a bruiser.
I mean, it's kind of sound corny, I suppose, but I've great empathy. I've sympathized towards people. Anybody that makes a mistake and wants to try and correct it, and I'm there for them, but I just cannot stand bullying. I absolutely... Yeah. If I see bullying, that guy, they want to clear out, man or woman, they go, because I don't spare them. Yeah. Yeah. Turn around, you're dealing with me now.
You have to be careful if you post it on YouTube and everyone will be after you.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Bring it on. It's doing the right thing as far as I'm concerned. I just, the more people that stand up for bullying and bully... people that bully at work, at school, in relationships, you know, and I'll tell you, some of the worst bullies are women and girls. Yeah, I mean, I helped a kind of a lot of girls here that were, you know, tried committing suicide a lot of the time because of having to deal with other girls their own age. And I was shocked when I came across it, to be honest. But you know what
about, do you reckon coaches bully their athletes?
Yeah, I mean, I've no time for it. I mean, I don't think... If you're a young, impressionable man or a woman or a boy or girl and somebody's bullying you, it's not going to end well for that person going forward, you know, because they're learning a bad trait, right? And they either carry it on themselves or they regress in their own growth going forward. I've seen the damage it's done to a lot of people, and they're trying to figure out themselves that, in their middle 30s and stuff like that, because they've had to deal with a lot of crap. And I find a lot of people that come into running are running from something. They're running for something that was bad in their lives, where they weren't very respected. They found there was something good at, but there was other issues going on at home or in the workplace or whatever, you know.
And I guess that's the beauty of it. It gives you something to hold on to, like for yourself. Like.
Well, it is. And the problem, Dindo, is when you get to 33 and 24 and 25 years of age, and the thing that now defines you as an athlete is now waning, and you're still young at retirement age, but you're finding you're having to retire.
Yeah.
And now then you're having to deal with the issues you've been running away from as a young boy or a young girl. And a lot of people get into anxiety, panic attacks, depression, and that's because there's really no place in our sport that looks after them. You've got a soccer, you've got the PFA. Soccer players fall in hard times, or they have a bad habit, or they're in the depression. There's a system there to kind of help them. There's nothing really like that in athletics, to be honest.
Because like Andrew Badley said, he came to the end of his career and he suffered from depression because he, you know, athletics defined him, and he was defined by his performances and his times and his numbers. And then when he didn't have that, it sent him into a bit of a spiral, which is
there's nobody. I mean, I was depressed when I was coming towards the end, and I didn't realize it at the time. But you look back at it.
Yeah.
And I would have told, if you said to me that I was a person that would have got depressed, I would have told you talking rubbish. Yeah. But we all have breaking points. We all have, you know, dreams, ambitions, hopes, aspirations. And if you don't kind of get there, that's bad enough. But you can deal with a lot of officialdom, you know, agents. And if they don't treat you the right way, it leaves a bitter taste in your mouth. I never fell out of love with running. Never, ever fell out of love with running and the joy it gave me. But I fell out of love with what was the way I was treated, the way I stood up for myself, and I would do it all again. I would not change one thing. I would do it all again. Did I hope to do better? Who doesn't? But, you know, I live with what I did because I tried the best I could, you know.
Well, what was the scene like in Ireland then when you were younger? Did you, was there lots of competition, of the opportunities?
The scene in Ireland was really healthy, vibrant. You know, you had a lot of people that knew how to coach. They understood athletics. They were immersed in it. Whereas I'm looking at today, a lot of people have come in coaching, they've read out of a book or they've been hired because of this. Yeah. No, I'm serious.
They are.
They're
paper coaches.
We had it healthy, you know. I had my eyes opened up then when I used to go to Britain, because I remember winning the National Junior Cross Country in 1986 here.
Yeah.
And then I flew over a few months later. Like, that was the end of our cross country season. That was March 1986.
Yeah.
And I flew over, and I think it was November 1986, and I flew over the first time myself, put money, invested myself, and I flew over to one of the Mike Sullys in Bristol.
Yeah.
And I finished 28. Yeah. And I was like, Jesus Christ, I just had my arse handed to me on a plate here. I mean, I'm getting trashed. Like, I was looking at the results and I was trying to say, where the hell am I? I was so far down. I was so far behind. And the guy that won that day was Richard Finlaw. Simon Mugglestone was second. Ian Cornford was third. It was stacked, right?
Yeah.
And I was going around. I swear to God, I was asking people questions about training because I was never coached here in Ireland. I used to go up my door or to run home from school. That was it. I didn't have any coaching, any structure. I lived in a place called Kilfinan in County Limerick, out in the middle of the countryside. Fantastic place to train. Yeah. Woods, forest, the whole lot. Brilliant. But I had no coaching. I hadn't a clue what I was doing. So I was winning all these races just naturally.
Yeah.
But I had no structure training at all. And 4 years later, when I had moved to England and I was living in England, I ran the Mike Sullys and I was sixth. But the only person that beat me from that day was Simon Mugglestone.
Really?
Because I was prepared to be the worst to try and become the best. If there's any message going to come out today, that's what I'd like people to stick at. You know, it's not an easy road. But if you get the best out of yourself, and it could take 8 or 9 years, well, then that's it. Because GB, yeah, Irish athletics, Finnish athletics, they're all looking for the best. It's impossible for everybody to be the best. But try and be the best you can be. It would be my motto.
Looking, obviously, the scene was like quite healthy back then. You said there's lots of great coaches in the UK, and you thrived on that. Do you think what do you think about the situation now in the UK? Like, is it the same vibrant scene that you see or you hear about?
I think it's coming back.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that have, you know, been ex-athletes that were out of it. They have kids on now running. They've kind of come back in. They've got a lot of knowledge that was lost because, you see, you can go on about depth and the depth of the national cross country, but depth comes across them because you've got to look at the rankings and you've got to look at 3K, 5K, 10K.
Yeah.
Now in
yeah.
Britain, 800, 1500 and 3K has improved. 5K has stepped up a bit, but it's not anywhere where it was.
Yeah, it's only top 10 at Mo.
The standard, and it's across the board, like the German. And competition drives performance, and performance then drives the rankings. So the numbers go up. It's like if the wider the base of the pyramid, the standard is going to go up. If that's diluted or it's weak, well, then it's going to suffer.
Yeah.
And the places I'm seeing that doing quite well is Scotland at the moment. And that's because they've incentives. They're trying to help the athletes more. They're trying to make them stay. They're problem solving, getting them jobs or whatever.
Yeah.
In England, it's a case of you're very much on your own.
Yeah.
And if you make it great, we'll get all the plaudits. But you sit down, you go, well, I'm doing this. But you're either on the poverty line or below the poverty line trying to be a world-class runner, because 3:39 is world-class, but you're regarded as a nobody when you go looking for a job and say, what have you been doing? Well, I've been trying to be as a runner for the last 7 or 8 years. And I know people that this has been said to me, but they've been told, well, you mustn't be very good because I never heard of you, which is soul-destroying to hear. Yeah. Soul-destroying.
Yeah.
Crushing.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah. You and your two big asses sitting in the chair saying that to me, so thank you very much.
It's got to be one of the only sports. Like, could you say, you probably say it's a mainstream sport, right? You know, Olympics draws in big audiences on the TV and stuff. It's got to be the only mainstream sports where you can compete for your country, yet be worse off financially for doing that than if you just went and got a normal job, like worked in full-time in an office or whatever.
Well, look, I mean, I took a year out in 93, 94, financed everything myself. I got into some great races, I ran amazing times, but within a year I had to be back working on the building site because there was no one to really help you get to where you got. There was no incentives, the money was awful. I was gassed when I was up in Finland and Sweden. I was being offered more money to drop out and not finish a race as a pacemaker than I was for winning. never, ever figure out that incentive. I was being offered something like $700 or $800 to pace make, and yet if I won a race like a 5,000 in Gefle in Sweden, I'd be lucky if I got 300 quid. Wow. And yet I was being offered more money to pace make and not finish, and yet by running and winning, I was getting a bunch of flowers, and I was supposed to put tomato ketchup on them and eat them or something. I was getting nothing. I was getting nothing. Yeah. You're standing there going, right, I'm going to be forced to go back on working in the building sites. And it was, that was hard to take, to be honest with you. It was really, really hard to take.
It makes you tough, though, for the race.
You know, yeah, I mean, there'd be some funny situations. Like, you know, I remember running for Middlesex the first time I ever ran the British cross country, the intercounties up in Corby, and I finished fourth. Yeah. And during the race, obviously, Steve Cram was running for the northeast of England. And I beat him. Now, I know he's not a cross country runner, but I wouldn't be a miler. He's bringing roundabouts, right? And he's expecting to beat me in that. But, you know, you're still inside yourself. You're going, oh, I beat Steve Cram. And I was going out on a Sunday run the following day, and I go, geez, I beat Steve Cram yesterday. This is fantastic. The following morning, Monday morning, it's 5:45. It's absolutely bucketing down with rain, absolutely teeming down. And I'm watching Steve Cram on television doing stretching exercises with his wife and baby daughter, or whatever it was at the time. And I'm going to have to dig a foundation, and I'm water up to my knees, and I'm going, what to blazes am I doing? I'm going to have to beat Steve Cram, and I'm going standing in a bog. I couldn't get over it. And I'm like, oh, dear. And it just teamed down, and I'm standing inside this train. This guy goes to me, you need to cheer up. And I look at him and go, are you for real? Cheer up. I'm inside in a bog.
Cross country's never glamorous. It's never been glamorous.
No, and that's the problem. That's the problem. It's so not recognised by the Olympic Council, which is a problem. I think what's happened as well, since the Africans have come to dominate, it's just destroyed it, because it was such a big sport in Europe. And I mean, I think back in the day, there was something like 93, 94 races. There's something now like, guys, I think it's only about 22 or 23.
In some ways, I think cross country is probably harder than track, because like you said, it's got 3 pounds, it's got the milers, it's got the 5K, it's got the 10K, it's got all the runners doing one race. When you got track, everyone's just doing their individual event. So the cross country's got everyone in one race.
But so yet, still, you get no money from it. It's crazy. Like, it's still not.
But I think it's a harder.
Well, they tried to do something a few years ago with that World Cross Grand Prix, and I was running, and at one stage it was leading, right? But you had a problem with it, because I would be getting okay money. But I was recognised as a cross country runner. But if they were down in terms of they want enough qualified athletes coming to, let's say, Britain, they would ring up a track guy and offer him 10 grand to run to have it qualified as a World Cross Grand Prix. And the guy that was a real cross country runner was getting a sweet FA.
Yeah.
You didn't want to do your World Cross Country. Anybody that maybe ran one race before, let's say Chiba or San Vittore di Olana in Cincomelini in Italy, they got 25 points for winning. Yeah. Then if they went to the World Cross Country and they won, they got double points. All of a sudden, they were up to 75 points. You could be on 53. The prize money all of a sudden was gone to the top guy. There was no reward for a guy being a cross-country runner. And there was no respect that it's a discipline in itself.
Yeah.
And there was no reward for being a discipline in itself. You were nearly penalised for trying to specialise in something that you loved.
But do you think the situation will ever change?
Everything, Sean or Jermaine, is about, it's about leadership. And it's what you're trying to instil. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of bad leaders. I mean, we had Prima Nebbiolo, I'm sorry, he ran it to sport the way he wanted to run it. It was never for athletes. It was about what they were going to get out of it and how they could make it bigger and commercially and how they were going to financially do well. Yeah. It went over to Lamaine Diack, who I always said you could take the A out of his second name, because he was never going to do anything good. And it came out. It came out.
Yeah.
It came out that, you know, he was useless. You had Seb saying, oh, my spiritual leader. I said, it's the sorriest words that ever came out of his mouth.
Yeah.
He just did nothing. Everything has been based in Africa. If you wanted to build something high performance into now yourself in Britain, in terms of an altitude center and all that, you wouldn't get it. Get the IAAF for backing one that was being built in Tanzania. So we're rolling out, trying to take on all these Africans, where there's no checks or anything or balances.
And we're
trying our best, and we're getting nothing out of it. You go back down to EA level, and the guy that's in there at the moment, I think he's going to try and do a lot of good, because he was a meet promoter at Bislett. The European Championships this year were the best European Championships for a long time, in fairness. They were really, really good. I said at the start of them, I wasn't going to watch them. I didn't, initially, then people came on to me, you got to watch it. I have to say, I was glad I did. The pole vault competition was one of the best things I've ever watched. The standard of the running, taking a shot put out of the stadium, all great. But you flick back to the European cross country, it's abysmal. There's 50 countries in Europe, right? I don't expect all 50 countries to be competing, but I do expect something like 35 to 36, at least. Yeah. But at European level, you have 12 and you have 14 in the senior. Yeah, but you know, if you go into cross country, you've only 12 or 14 countries competing in the European cross country.
Yeah,
so if you've 12 countries and there's four athletes per country, that's 48 runners.
Yeah.
Plus, you've got all the Africans running for Turkey and stuff, which is...
Yeah, but they're on about now, they brought in this three-year rule. But I mean, that means they could have somebody applied now and they could be in 2 years' time, or they could have applied 2 years ago and they'd be in 1 year's time.
Yeah.
They don't mind waiting, these people. And our countries wouldn't do it. But these guys would say, right, we've three Keynes at the moment, we need to... And as far as I'm concerned, it should be 4 to score. I mean... I'm sorry it's gone down to 3 to score, because that's, you're having to come down to somebody else's level. It's like playing a bad pool player. All of a sudden, I've got 2 shots, I can play a back table.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It's just like,
becomes a crap game. Yeah.
You're coming down to their level rather than them coming up to you. As far as I'm concerned, best cross-country courses in the world are in Britain, right? You've got real proper cross-country, 2.5 mile laps, 3 mile laps, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got great iconic courses, fantastic courses, even I've never ran it up in Oxfordshire and so on, right?
Yeah.
But you want to go up to these continental courses, you're trying to bring everybody down to your level. Oh, you're Britain's winning all the time. How can we penalise them? All right, let's make a 3 to score. And all of a sudden, Turkey have got 3 Kenyans and they win the competition and everybody's shocked.
Yeah.
And it's also like 15 laps as well.
Sometimes you have to adapt to that. But it's either about being real cross country or it's not. I'm looking forward to seeing what this world cross country is going to be like in Denmark. And when it's been real cross country, you know, a lot of the Africans have struggled.
Yeah.
They don't like heavy mud and falling all over the place and stumbling. The standards of European athletes come up to that.
Yeah.
But we've gone down and we're running, let's say, in Stellenbosch in Cape Town for the World Cross Country on a grass track.
Yeah.
Where if I decided to join in the last kilometer, I still get my ass kicked because he's running sub four minute mile pace.
Yeah.
It's nothing. Yeah. If it's going to be cross country, make it cross country. If not, take
job. Yeah. So looking back to your own, your career and your cross country running, what would be a typical week for you when you were at your, I guess, at your peak, when you were running World Cross Country Championships and you were you living in London at that stage?
I was living in London. Yeah. I lived in Reynolds Lane for quite a period of time. I started off in Ealing and then I moved up to Reynolds Lane. And then I loved it over there because I used to train over in Ruislip Woods.
Yeah.
Ruislip Woods for me. Fantastic place to train. And there's an awful lot of, as well, cross-country, you know, footpaths.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that to train and use and stuff. Same when I moved over towards Burnt Oak, Edgeworth direction. I was able to run out towards Elstree and Totteridge and Barnet and Boreham Wood and Stanmore and that. And it was loads of forests, loads of cross-country trails. So it was really, really good.
Yeah.
I suppose, when I got to England, my mileage in training, because I'd never been coached, was it was non really existent. I knew nothing about mile repeats. I knew nothing about fartlek. I just knew nothing.
Yeah.
And it was great because I was able to race. The gun went, I raced, and I had a brain. I used it. I engaged it, right? So I was walking out. If I try to make this move now, could I sustain it to the finish? And so on. So that was grand. When I got over, I met PJ Fagan, thank God, and he was at London Irish. I fell into running over there by fluke.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't going to run when I went to England. I'd gone to work and more or less I was packing in the running, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I got into the running over and I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with the venues. I fell in love with the courses.
Yeah.
And I took off from there. And I built up, I suppose, within a year to doing about 100 mile a week, 90, 100 mile a week. Some weeks I would go back down to 70 for a couple of weeks. But more or less I was building the mileage up.
Yeah.
By the time I was winning the British cross country, I did some really big weeks. I mean, my biggest weeks, 3 weeks ever, were 203, 200, and 173.
What?
Yeah, I was big mileage man. Yeah. I mean, I did 10 weeks of 150. I would do big sessions when I'd go back. When I'd come off the high mileage and go back down to doing like 70 or 80 mile a week, I might do 10 weeks of 150.
Yeah.
When I go back down.
But when you say at 150 or 200, how fast?
No, it was all running, no sessions.
Right. No, but how fast were the miles? Were you doing like 7 minute miling?
7:30, 7:40 I never got caught into the pace, Sean. I got caught into feel.
Okay.
How you felt.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people make this thing you need to be running at 7:30 pace. This is what it says in the chart. Yeah. That's grand. But if you try to run 7:30 your own, well, you'd be on your hands and knees afterwards, because it's 9 minute mile on where I live. It's all hills.
Yeah.
You gotta cut your claw. It's like saying to a guy, I want you to do it. Yeah, that's not going to be work for me, mate. That's why that, because I live in the Fens in Cambridgeshire. It's as flat as a pancake.
Yeah.
The only hill you're going to get is a curb.
Yeah.
So, that's it. You got to cut. I always went by how I felt. I never looked at a watch. When I got back after a track season, and I took 3 weeks off after the end of a track season, I would run the next 6-7 weeks without a watch. Never wore a watch at all.
Yeah.
I just ran. Yeah. I knew how far I was running. I didn't bother about time. I went out to enjoy running, because first and foremost, I enjoyed running, and you become a slave to it. And when you win a race, it's more like a relief rather than excitement or joy.
Yeah.
I tried to keep running it as much as possible. So if you ever look back and talk to a lot of athletes around the starting line, I'd be cracking jokes.
Yeah.
Because I was content in who I was.
Yeah. I think that's really important. For me, I've just come back tried the marathon in October. So I was going for sub 220, and it got derailed at the end, had a bit of an injury problem and things didn't go well. And since then I've had a baby and I'm just coming back, and I've been looking at my watch and thinking, I'm way off what I'm doing. And it brings so much pressure, doesn't it? Like, you should just go out there and just enjoy it.
Never bothered me. Yeah. I never looked at a watch. There was only one line to me, and that was the finishing line. Like, I mean, I remember running the South of England track championships 1 year. And I only got into the B race after being fifth in my first ever Sutherland and Basingstoke in 1989. So I was down Crystal Palace at the South of England, and I was only in the B race. I was a bit disappointed, but I got on with an opportunity to race.
Yeah.
Barry Wright beat me. I was second. I think he ran 14:26 and I ran 14:27. Massive PB for me, like nearly 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I was delighted.
Yeah.
But we're out running the following day, and a guy that was in our club that got into the A race ran awful, and he was ripping me the whole way down. I'm in the A race and you're in the B race, and he was ripping me up. You know what it's like. And he got in because he was third in the 1500 the year before.
Yeah.
And you can automatically go up. So we were running the following day, and of course I was knackered, and he was sulking because he didn't have a good race. And every time he went to the front, I'd come up alongside him and get in front of him and slow it down. And he goes to me, "We're not here to run slow today, Downsy." And I goes, "Well, if you wanted to run fast, you should have done it yesterday." He was out of it like a bandit. He was gone, cloud of smoke, fuming, absolutely. But I didn't care, because I was there to recover. I just was not getting into it, But you'd have some good laughs.
Yeah.
You'd have some good
laughs. And within your approach, did you do a lot of sessions and stuff? Were you mainly more of a racer? Was your hard sessions races, or how did you do that?
Well, I would pick periods where I would train. Like, say I was doing 110 miles a week. One of my toughest workouts would be I would run 12 miles, and then I would do 3x2 mile after it, in about 9:25 to 9:30 with a 3 minute recovery. A lot of what I did was how I progressed it. You know, I didn't arrive just at 200 miles a week. I didn't arrive just at, like, I did massive workout, guys. I did things like 18 by a mile, 10 by 3K.
Wow.
You know, 60 by 400, 50 by 300. I did math, but I also did very short stuff.
Yeah.
You know, where I go down to the track and I say, right, today I'm taking 5 minutes, but I'm running 4x400. And I had decent speed. Like, I mean, I ran 23.7 for 200. I ran 50 flat for 400.
Yeah.
But I looked, and I never went with 800, because I was going to go, I could run 800 and I could run 150, but where's it going to get me? I believe I could have ran 3:38 and after 1500, but I was going, where's it going to get me? You know, I've got that speed, but where am I going to go with it? Whereas I had options when I went longer. You know, I had the cross country.
Yeah.
I could do road races abroad. I could obviously go up to the track
and
running 5K, 10,000 meters. So, and I had an option, and I could take those on. And I had pretty good basic speed, I suppose. But I never really, a lot of people were quite surprised, because I was good in the mud. They got quite a hop if I ran quite well in the track. Like, I was second in the 3A's 3K, but not a lot of people know that. And I've ran 13:29, but I ran the last 800 in 1:57. So a lot of people are quite surprised by that, because they remember me as a mudlark.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's there, but you're looking at, well, where am I going? What am I doing? What am I going to get? I mean, I have regrets. I should have structured it more and said, right, I have a 4-year plan. I'm going for the Olympics. I'm going for that. But you're turning around. You're accommodating stuff. You're accommodating people. You're accommodating club members. You know, sometimes you might have to be a little bit more serious. But do you know what? It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, how did you come up with the plans then? Were you coaching yourself at that stage, or were you have that's been passing?
Well, I was initially coached by PJ Fagan for a good period of time, and PJ, God rest him, he used to sit down with me at the end of every, you know, season. So it could be a cross country season, a track season. And he'd go, John, what you think? Are you happy? Are you happy going forward? Because, you know, you're running times. I've never ran these sort of times. You know, I said, PJ, it's working. Let's keep going. And we kept doing that for a good period of time. And he came up to me one day and he said, John, he said, I'm getting really worried. I think you need to go and find somebody else. He was an absolute gent like that, PJ. He was just a genuine, genuine, lovely man. And he said, I think you should go to Bob Parker. And I went to Bob. I went to Bob for a period of time. And I stayed there for a good while. And I improved. But I just felt I had a better connection with PJ. And I went back to PJ again. And it was during that period, for a man that was supposed to know nothing, I ended up running 13:29.
Wow.
Around shortly after that, PJ got a little bit sick. And he said, look, he says, I'm going to back off a little bit. And I approached Dave Bedford. And I went to Dave Bedford. And we had a discussion and we worked together for about a year and a half. I didn't got badly hurt on a building site. Right. And I was out for 2 years. I was out for 26 months.
Wow.
I got really badly hurt on a building site. And that was it then. I got back. I got back to a good level. I got back to running 29:10 for 10K after being out for 26 months. But I was never the same athlete again. You know, and my powers of recovery had kind of gone. I mean, I could recover so quick. It was like, I don't know, like the Energizer Bunny, but I could recover. But once I got towards that 30 years of age, which is still young, but you got to remember, I had an awful amount of work done in my body in terms of physical work with the building.
Yeah.
Sense. So I was in a bad way of trying to come back, and I just couldn't do.
What was the injury? I
lifted something at work, a bag of cement, funny, and it just my whole back went. My back, my groin, my hip, and I was the next 26 months trying to get that right.
Right.
It was nothing to do with running. It was just
You didn't bend your knees when you lifted it.
I did, mate, but it was just breaking point, I suppose, I was at, to be honest with you. It was just like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
It was the cement back that broke mine, and it was just one of those things, you know. And it was gutting, to be honest with you. It was mentally one of the hardest places I've ever been, because I'm still young. I still want to compete. I still want to get out there. You're watching people like Dominic Bannister and Justin Pugley win the English National, and you know in your heart you can take these people on. Yeah. Don't begrudge them, but you know in your heart these are opportunities.
Yeah.
And you're seeing like my biggest ambition, one of my biggest ambitions. Like if I was really brutal, I sat down. I wanted to do three things. I wanted to break 4 minutes for a mile, and I ran 4 minutes flat, 0-1. Right?
Aww.
I wanted to win the English National. I never did. And I wanted to go to the Olympics, and I never did. So if I was really brutal, you could say I didn't do well. But, you know, there's a lot of reasons why. But, you know, getting back from that injury, I suppose, is one of the best things I ever did, because I thought I'd never, do mine walk well, I never thought I'd ever run again.
Yeah.
And I did. I got back to winning the South of England again. And I ran quite well, but it was never the same level, because I knew I could never go to the mileage I used to do before. And I'd become a dad. And that was, you know, actually become a dad, you've more responsibilities.
Mm.
You've now an extra mouth to feed,
yeah.
You know. So it becomes a different game. But I always raced because I enjoyed racing. I you know, I don't mean this in the wrong way. I minded getting beaten. But I didn't mind getting beaten, because I was still able to do something I loved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was able to take that hit. A lot of people can't take that hit.
Yeah.
I decided, you know what, I had a good innings. I did what I did. And if I do anything going far from here, it's a bonus, because I was still able to do what I loved.
Yeah.
So.
Do you still run now? Or are you still able to get out there?
I do 3 or 4 times a week. I just do 20 minutes a day.
Right. Okay.
You know, I just try and make... Keep my hand in it. I've got
keep your hand in it.
I've got a little girl. She's 11. She's Down syndrome, so she's quite a handful.
Yeah.
She's brilliant. She's absolutely brilliant. But maybe in a year's time, I might decide to get back into it and do a little bit more. I feel like I need to do some sort of a project in terms of a goal, like, I mean, a comrades. So I'm not going to commit to that 100%, but I feel like I need to do something, because I suppose...
Not the Masters? Like, you know, no, like the Masters?
My mindset is like this, mate. I don't see Masters. Masters athletics never interest me. It's not a thing to Masters at all. If I'm going into a race, I'm going to try and win.
Yeah.
Just it's been my mindset. I didn't care who I lined up against. Now, I might have come up 28th, or I might have come 7th, or I might have come 2nd, or I might have won it. But my mindset going into any race was, I'm here to run, and anybody's going to beat me is going to have to run the socks off. That was always my mindset. Yeah. I was afraid of nobody. I wasn't afraid of pain. Like, my attitude was, I've worked before. I've run against people before. Some have come, some have gone. New ones will arrive. Didn't bother me. It just, what I was competing against was myself. And what I was competing against was the race. Too many people get caught up, you know, who's around them. Like, you got to run the English National, Sean, right, at the top end, back in the day.
Yeah.
You couldn't make a plan.
Yeah.
Because you'd get out, you'd eventually get up to the leaders after 2 miles, and next minute you'd start going around, you go, oh, he's here. And within about 20 seconds, you've looked at about 20 guys that are capable of winning.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of see how the race evolved, and it's mental chess. You've got to go, well, I can't wait for him for a kick because I know he's got serious wheels. Yeah. He's weak in the hills. I'm going to muddy patch. You're trying to out-think people, and you're trying to outrun, out-gut, and out-think. That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
All while having a lovely afternoon in sunny Palmerston.
And like you said, it's really scenic, but you're not even taking in the views because you're already thinking about.
No, but you know what? You say that. Well, come on. I remember I used to run some races and come around, and it was not disrespecting anybody, but come around, but I'd see a fish I'd know in the corner. Hiya, Howard, how's it going? And the guy that's in going, he's talking. And I'd be winding him up.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I would enjoy it, and I would go, geez, that's a nice view of Kenwood House there at the moment, actually. Yeah, I'm back. And that stuff like that would be going through my head, and then they'd be going, what am I having for dinner? Having the way home, or will I have something healthier? You know, you'd have the daftest conversations when you're running. You nearly have to back in the, I'm in a race here. What am I doing? You know, I try to enjoy it. I know that sounds crazy and people would go against it.
Yeah.
But if we're so scientific on and we're so gone the way everybody thinks you should be going, well, we've not really moved forward from what they were doing 40 years ago when they went out and just ran hard and enjoyed it, to be honest, and had no garments, no lactate testing, nothing. They just ran.
And there's probably better competition. Everyone was up. Everyone wanted to race each other. People were racing every weekend, and you're more used to that.
Well, you could pick and there was no easy races. There was none. I remember going over to run a Chingford League. There was nothing on, and I was trying to get back at one stage. This was when I was been out for the 2 years, and I remember going over to this Chingford League, and this guy comes up to me and goes, "Oh, you'll win easy today." And I said, "Never say that, mate." I said, "You just don't know who's going to turn up. You haven't a clue."
Yeah.
And I said, look what happened. Dave Lewis at the Red Rose League and Steve Tunsell turned up and Steve Tunsell kicked his backside. So I said it anyway. Off I went. I took off out of the blocks. Now, it was a real mud bat of a course. Yeah. And I took off. It's with this guy staying behind me. And I've looked back. I've come back, turned round. I've gone back. Jeez, where's your man from? Is he Australian? Is he New Zealand? Is he South African? Where the fuck's this guy from? And I eventually turned round, coming towards the end of the first lap. And I said, who are you? Now, I might have the name wrong. Is it Jackson from Aldershot?
Ed Jackson.
Yeah, big guy.
Yeah.
So I turned around and I said, who are you and where are you from? And he started going into this conversation. Oh, my name's Ed Jackson. I'm from Aldershot. And John said for me to come up and do a race. And he was talking away. And he wasn't even out of breath. And I goes, oh, I'm in trouble here. I'm in trouble. This guy's having a full blown. And I said, right. I found out enough. Thanks. I know who you are. And I thought, oh, right. So I said, I'll wait for the hill and the second lap. Nobody has ever beat me going uphill. Nobody to that point had ever beat me going uphill. I always ran away from people. Kenny Stewart, even, who was fell running champion of Britain and was a great athlete from Cumbria, said it to me one day. He said, I've never seen anybody go uphill like you. Till that day, Ed Jackson ran away from me up the hill. And I was like, oh, my God. And he absolutely trounced me.
Yeah.
And I came in, met that guy after, and he said, how far did you win by? And I said, I lost. He was like, what? I said, oh, I got my ass kicked.
Yeah.
You know, so there was no easy races. There was no easy race at all, you know.
Yeah. Looking back sort of now and your interest in athletics, you're coaching at the moment, is that right?
I coach Very little. I mean, I try and take on people who want to listen.
Yeah.
And are prepared, you know, to listen and not be listening to anybody else. It's either my way or the highway.
Yeah.
So I have a good group here that's I coach online and basically talk to people on the phone. I send them schedules.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, I've got quite a good people. I have about 20 people and stuff, which keeps me busy and stuff. But none of them are high end. Right. None of them are high end because I find at the moment what happens is if they're high end, they're inclined to be around other people that are high end. And the problem is people talking in the rear. And if you're not around them, they're not.
Yeah.
They're trying to go, well, I'm in a build-up phase, and yet the guy I'm running against is running, let's say, the National Road Relays, and he's running 16:20. And your man is running 17:01, but I'm building for the summer, which is what he wants.
Yeah.
But he can't take the hit,
yeah.
So he's kind of looking. What are they doing over there? I'm doing this, but I think I want to be over there. And you end up going to about 10 different coaches, and you don't move forward. You're either going to listen and move forward. If you do, you'll improve. Because
yeah.
I've done it with too many people that have listened.
Yeah.
But it's if they listen. If they're not, and somebody else isn't in the rear, that's yeah. the biggest problem. And yeah. with the social media today, that's very, very hard because nearly everybody's in your ear, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're still kind of on the scene, like you've been uploading some vlogs about UK athletics and British athletics, whatever they want to call themselves these days, England athletics. And what's driven you to do that? What's been the spark?
Because I can see my sport, the one I fell in love with in Britain, going off a cliff.
Yeah.
Because it's been ran by people that are only interested in money and in greed. And, you know, why would this be important to, let's say, to a guy that's not getting an international from Britain and stuff like that, or not running for England or whatever? Well, it's important that if it goes the way, and I believe it is because I've had too many people now getting onto me, different regional councils in England, saying, like, there's a really scary one at the moment with England athletics that I said from the get-go, this is to get rid of the clubs, the counties and the regions. Well, if the clubs and county regions are gone, Sean and Jermaine, yeah. you have nothing. Yeah. They are going to go a high-performance route. And a lot of people say, oh, that'll never happen. I said it months ago to people that England would be taken over. They didn't believe me. It's happening.
Yeah.
They didn't say, I said the Scottish athletics and Welsh athletics would be taken over and they would come out of the room screaming. They did, because they couldn't believe it was after happening.
Yeah.
We're putting loads of money in that's paying massive wages at the top for EA, and nothing is coming back to the ground level.
Yeah.
The numbers are dwindling in athletics already, not just in road running and cross country. It's higher in one sense in terms of national, but that's because it's open to everybody to run.
Yeah.
If you're not talking about depth, you're just talking about mass participation nearly in a way.
Yeah.
What I'm on about, if you look at county level and you look at the standards and you look at the times, they're regressing. You have less pole vaulters coming in. You have less triple jumpers coming in.
Yeah.
Look, if you got somebody like Jessica Innes Hill, who's based in Sheffield and is in Don Valley Stadium, and Don Valley Stadium is getting closed down, there's a problem coming your way.
Yeah.
They're trying to close Crystal Palace. They're trying to close Tooting Beck.
Yeah.
They're trying to close Rotherham Track. Why? Because central government doesn't want to fund the sport going forward the way it should anymore, which yeah. means the clubs, the counties and regions can go to hell.
Yeah.
So what they want is they want a system where the lottery funding is going to come in and pay them and they're not going to worry about the rest of the sport.
Yeah.
So it's important for the young athletes coming into clubs. Well, which, by the way, there's now going to be no youth division leagues on the track. So yeah. your place to kind of get acclimatized and indoctrined and bloodied is yeah. now going to be gone. Where are you going to go? You're yeah. going to go counties, nationals, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe the YDL is the best situation because I don't think anybody should be running the national championship from the age of 15 down. I think it should be from the age of 16 up and make it something that you attain and aspire to do.
Yeah.
Because if you're running at 11 years of age, by the time you get to 16, you've probably ran maybe 20, 25 national championships. It becomes boring.
Yeah.
So why did you concentrate in leagues more, YDL more, and Bill, but we're not in control of that because England Athletics and UK are in charge of that.
Yeah.
They're getting all the lottery funding for it, and the investment going back into the clubs and counties and regions is not happening. Yeah. So the sport is going to die. They are going to take it off a cliff.
Yeah.
This extraordinary general meeting at the end of this month is actually very, very worrying for England Athletics because if you take out...
Boring, though. League matches are boring. No one goes to watch. No one wants to compete. It's like, you got like one person doing eight events.
And the league match.
It is. That's leadership. Yeah. That's jazzing it up. There's one county here a few years ago who changed up to cross country, right? And they had, you know, you'd have your under 12s, under 14s, under 16s, under 18s, junior men, senior men, senior women. And what they did was when one race had gone off, they ran another. Boom, boom, boom. They were out of there within 90 minutes. Yeah. So there is ways of jazzing it up, and there's ways of changing it, and there's ways of making it more attractive to people that are coming from, let's say, soccer and say, cheekies, we're in and out in 90 minutes. There's ways of doing that. You could have 100 meters on the track, but right, you're waiting for heats. You have two lanes of a track, boom, boom, boom. Portals, boats on the track, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Speed everything up. Yeah. You get in,
do you know what it is, John? It's the officials, the old officials that are stuck in their ways that don't want to change.
I don't know about that. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of officials and they would like to have a shorter day themselves, to be honest. But it's the rules saying we have to do it this way. It was always done this way. And it's not so much the officials that want to change it. It's the hierarchy of England Athletics, Southern County, Great Britain Athletics, who are not wanting to change. You look at outside of that, you look at Highgate. They've ramped it up. They have drink. You can gamble on the race. You have music. It's boom, 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 boom. Yeah, look.
I don't like gambling, but yeah.
No, you can bet that if you want. Yeah. You can bet that it goes on now. And do you know what? Fair dues.
Yeah.
I wouldn't knock it.
Yeah.
You know, say, right, we're going to watch the 10,000. You and me could be saying, right, there's 10 quid on here, 10 to 1, whatever, whoever pick. You know?
Yeah.
That's the way it should. You're allowed
to spectacle.
Gamble. It's not right. But you're watching, what was I watching yesterday? I'm trying to figure out what I was watching yesterday. Oh, yeah. I was watching a soccer match. And it was Daft.com and Red 32 and Paddy Power. Got rid of the fag, which is great for sponsorship. You got rid of the drink for sponsorship and soccer. But now you've got gambling.
Yeah.
And that's allowed being that, but it's not allowed being anywhere else. You have Great Britain Athletics, who by Niels DeVos, other countries now can get a second sponsor. So let's say I'm from Denmark and I'm sponsored by Nike. I can now get another sponsor. Let's say it's, I don't know, Honda. Yeah. And I can put Honda on my vest.
Yeah.
Great Britain can put any sponsor on its vest now for 2030.
Really?
Nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts, but that thing is now going to come in. It will eventually come in. Well, personal sponsorship, wearing your sponsors on your singlet. So it has to meet. The people at the top can't keep making the money by the guys in the ground. You're doing all the donkey walk and getting all the you're supplying the trade, the whole thing that they're looking at. They're all pocketed. You get nothing.
Yeah. And you just...
It's going to come to an end.
Yeah. And even this with thing coming up, the World Cross Country is taking place, when is it? March. And they're not even going to send the bloody team. It's only Denmark. It's not that expensive, is it, to send a few people across?
It's who's been put in there. Yeah. It's who's been put in there. And who's fighting in there? You've nobody fighting for the sport inside there.
No.
Look, when you have people with their own agenda and they want to get this across the line in terms of high performance, so what will happen, you could probably have Team London, Team Bristol or Bath, Team Loughborough, Team Manchester. That's the way they want to go because it's going to be easier to control. Why would you have a federation, right, like UK, when DeVos went in 2012 and was taught, right, you have to reduce the current staffing levels from 72 down to 28.
Yeah.
He went the other way. He went up to 142.
Did he?
So I had to sit down and go, well, why are you doubling when you're supposed to be more than reducing by half?
Yeah.
And I had to go, he wants people to be in high-performance centres to be able to take and have school days, high-performance days, whatever. He's now got staffing levels. And he's got his yes sir, no sir, three bags full.
Yeah.
This thing that's coming in with England Athletics, fit and proper test. Well, you have to be fit and proper, assessed by the board of England Athletics, whether you're going to be on their board, even though you've been promoted by your club and county on whatever regional council. So basically, if you're not going to say yes or no or three bags full, you won't get on.
Yeah.
And why do they want yes or no three bags full? Because now they want to shut off the clubs and the counties and the regions. We want to look after ourselves. Now we can be taken over by UK Athletics. We're all on the same boat together, a bed together. And now we can get the lottery funding and everybody else can go jump.
Yeah.
That's basically right. So you have a massive problem over as to what's going to happen you going forward.
Yeah.
If it pans out the way it pans, I think it's going to pan out, you're done.
Yeah.
And that's why I got involved.
Yeah.
I can't see what I fell in love with. and all the counties and the regions and the race and the history all gone into oblivion. Yeah. It can happen, mate. If they're closing banks and everything down in different rural towns in Northumberland and Dorset and Devon,
yeah,
they'll have no problem getting rid of your history. And it doesn't matter to them. It's not personal to them. Yeah. It's personal to you and me, but it's not to them.
What can we do then? What can we do as runners? What do you think we can do to stand up for ourselves?
Well, we have to see now what happens at this extraordinary general meeting, right? Yeah. Which is on the 30th of January. I've been on and I've been putting my vlogs on and I'm getting a good response and I'm getting 3,000 or 4,000 watching it and some of them and I'm getting 1.5 in another. Yeah. But there needs to be more of the youth engaged in this and it needs to go down to things that you're falling in love with will be gone. There needs to be some sort of backing of the regions.
Yeah.
Really what I've told the regions to do is I said, right, you're paying 15 quid to be registered with a club. Well, it's 50 quid to be with the club. The 15 quid is going to England Athletics.
Yeah.
England Athletics doesn't organise anything bar a really poorly attended England Track and Field Championships, but it's the main instigator of the England Track and Field Commonwealth Games team. You have 15 quid coming from Europe. So, right, 5 quid of that goes back to your area, whether it be North, Midlands or South. Within England Athletics, the ECCA, the English Cross Country Association, organises the English National and it organises the English National Cross Country Relays.
Yeah.
The ERRA, the English Road Running Association, organises the 6 stage, the 12 stage, National 10K on the road, National whatever. That is what it organises. Now, yeah, there might be an England 5K champs and stuff like that, but in terms of real organisation, these other organisations that are doing all the work for England Athletics. So why are you paying money to an organisation that is now taking in 2.6 million and is only giving back 66,000 to competition and development? Really? It's not going to be able to organise anything. Yeah, they're taking in 2.6 in fees.
Yeah.
They're taking in another 2.2 on coaching courses and they're taking in another, I think, is it 1.8 on officials courses. So they're taking in the guts of nearly 8 million. Only 66,000 is coming back into athletics. Nobody's funded by England Athletics like Scotland or Wales are.
Yeah.
And what are you paying for? So I'd be putting 5 quid each to those. I'd be incentivizing England Athletics to send more teams to road races in Austria, Holland, Germany, Finland.
Yeah.
I would be giving more competition to it. I'd be sending an English team to the European cross country. You have 6 in the junior women, 6 in the junior men, under 23, women and men, and senior men. All of a sudden, instead of 24 athletes, 36 athletes, you now from all these regions have something like 94.
Right.
Again, you're incentivizing the English flag, you're incentivizing your English national cross country championships, you're incentivizing the national, Scottish national, the Welsh national, and you're opening up opportunities for those guys to go in.
Yeah.
Is it a fluke since I said that these countries would be taken over? They came out of that meeting and Scotland and Wales said they were going to go independent. Is it heck? I told them I was coming. I warned them.
Yeah.
And people thought I was nuts.
Yeah.
But, you know, just because I walk on the building site doesn't mean I'm as thick as a brick.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, well, I'm not. Because, you know what? I was running with a guy one day. And I was after running a breakthrough for 1,500 for me. I was after running 3:45. And the man comes up to me, this guy warming down. I won't say who he is. I won't hang him out to dry. But he's in the BMC quite high up. Right, but he turns around to me and goes, John, what do you work at? I said, oh, plastering and all that. And he goes, I work in an office. But he says, you know, working in a building site, it's not half as taxing as having to use your brain. And I stopped and he turned around and he says, what's wrong? I said, so when I get a problem, it solves itself. And he's like, what? I said, if I get a problem, it solves itself. I don't have to use my brain. It just solves itself. I says, listen, mate, on a building site, I would get 20 problems a day. No handbook. Yeah. You got to figure it out.
Yeah.
You got to use initiative. You got to problem solve it on the spot.
Yeah.
No manual, solve it. And I did. So I said, why? That's what I bring to running. So that's why I worked this thing out, as far as I'm concerned. I sat down and I talk completely different of everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm told it's a goose and I'm looking at it and it's a dog, well, it's a dog, but no, they're telling me it's a goose.
Yeah.
Well, then I've got to go, no, I'm going with my gut here. I've got to start thinking differently. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
So,
and where can we catch up with the vlogs? Are they on YouTube?
No, I have, listen, mate, you're lucky I'm even talking to you on this because I'm such a, what's the word? A nerd.
Yeah.
This sort of, analogy, I'm brutal. I've only really got on Facebook about just a year and three quarter ago. Didn't know how to use it. Messenger, all it's been totally new to me. I never used my life. I was terrified of it, to be honest.
But you Snapchat? You must Snapchat.
No. Listen, mate, people have told me go on Twitter, go on Instagram, go on LinkedIn. And I said, listen, mate, I am bad enough as it is on Facebook or WhatsApp or Messenger. I said, I couldn't get into the rest of them. I don't need them. I'm after learning these little kind of traits and that, and I've stuck to it. But somebody is actually on about uploading all the vlogs onto YouTube. Best look at that. I wouldn't have a clue. I wouldn't know how to do it. I just wouldn't know how to do it. It's probably very simple, but I wouldn't have a clue, you know.
I'm conscious we've been keeping you a long time here. We've got three quick questions, and Jermaine might have an extra one if he's got one up under his hat. They're quick fire questions. So the first one is, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
Well, what do you mean by that, Dom?
So, you could either interpret it as a race that you're in that you were just, you know, in the zone and it was the best experience.
If it's a race.
Yeah.
If it's a race, English national.
English national. Perfect.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
And I'd love to be back in England.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. I miss it. I miss England terribly.
Yeah. Okay.
I do. What I was into, you're going to watch the races, watching athletes.
Yeah.
You know, it was like breathing. But here, it's a dead sin. Yeah. It's I live in the most beautiful place.
Yeah.
Gorgeous place. But it's like I'm missing my fix, to be honest with you. I'm missing athletics, something desperate. Yeah. The way I understand it, the way I fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And the races, because I got indoctrined properly over. As simple as that.
Yeah.
Next question.
Fantastic. The next one is, recommend us something. Could be anything, book, film, magazine, something to watch.
Book. Malcolm Gladwell, Outlier.
Is that the 1,000 Hours one or the other?
10,000 Hours, baby.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah, fantastic.
I dug that because I think I was one of those people.
Yeah.
And 10,000 Hours, it sounded appropriate.
Yeah.
Very good. You're well read then, Sean, if you've read that.
He's a runner himself, isn't he? He was a miler.
Tell you what, the way he weaves a story and the way he brings it all together at the end. I mean, anybody that hasn't read that book should try and get their hands on it. And you know what? Put it down, go away from it for a couple of weeks and then come back and read it again from start to finish, because it is just the most fantastic. It makes you think so differently.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic book.
Great. Last one is, hang on, Jermaine might have one. What, in your opinion, is the greatest endurance performance of all time?
I suppose, for me, at the age he was, Lopez, winning the World Cross Country in 1985. Yeah. He was 38 years of age. He was just the most amazing tactician to watch. He never looked back, but he always looked to the side. And he used to read people's faces. He was just a brilliant, brilliant tactician, brilliant runner, very graceful to watch. And I just think the way he won that World Cross Country that day, I was there personally.
Yeah.
I thought it was the best pieces of running I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, fantastic. Perfect. Nice one. Well, it's been great chatting, John. We'll push everyone to check out the vlogs and things, but great chat, and hopefully we'll see you out running at some point and over in England and as part of the scene. So a fun interview there is that Achilles growling, Jermaine?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
When I talk to you, I sit in a window, obviously, to get a better reception.
And he wants to
play. And then he's like, no, he's like, he goes, grabs a ball and wants to play.
Behave yourself, Achilles. Anyway, but that was a great interview with John. That was a great interview with John. And some good tips, not only nice chatting about the Freetch Athletics and what's happening with the governing bodies and John's take on that, but also his training and how he approached his career as an athlete and some nice tips from there from John. But we must say, we have got some reviews, but I'll come to those in a moment. I'll come to the reviews in a minute because we want to announce a new feature. We want interaction with you lovely listeners. We want people to...
We want to know what you're doing.
We want to know what you're doing right now. We want to know what you're wearing.
Hey, that's my kind of conversation right there.
For example, I'm wearing some Runderwear pants and some chinos. Chinos, a shirt, and a t-shirt.
What, chinos with Runderwears on top.
Yeah, well, I didn't have many pants clean, so I just chucked the run. No, the Runderwear's underneath. I'm not Superman. We basically want to have a weekly feature, which is called, we've got to think of more of a snappy title, Age Graded Performance of the Week. So basically, we want you to post in on one of our social posts. That can be on Facebook, Twitter, or just contact us via email at get in touch at letsgetrunning.co.uk. And just let us know what your performance that week and your age graded time. So if you don't know how to work out your age graded time, I'll put a link to a site where you can do that. So we don't want you to let us know that you run a 30-minute 10K or 39-minute 10K or whatever else. We want you to tell us exactly your age graded performance.
Your okay? points.
So we're going to tell you our points. We're going to probably record the shows around the end of the week each week. So this is Thursday. So try and get them in early in the week. So perhaps from the following weekend. And we'll announce, we'll have a listener podium for the age graded performance of the week. So get on with that. Join in and let us know your results. Obviously, hopefully for next week, I'll have my 10K result in Vondelpark up there, which I'll put up there. Hopefully I'll get a good one.
How old are you?
I'm 36. I'm 36.
We're going to be in the same category.
Yeah. 35 plus. Yeah. But onto the reviews. We've had two lovely reviews. We need more reviews. We love reviews, and they really help us to drive the listeners and the show. So that's good for us. And
two reviews. We're overflowing.
And they've got a good one. We've got one here from Iron Man Spicer. Spicer has given us a good one. He has said, let me just get it out properly. I've only been listening to this podcast for around 6 months, and this is my first choice. Very funny conversations between the White Devil and Caramel Kid, and Jermaine's laugh is so contagious. Some great interviews on there too, and Sean is always willing to pass on bits of advice and training tips on social media. Big thumbs up from me, and keep up the good work. And there's an emoji of a thumb. So thanks a lot for that, Elliot.
Yep, we love that. We love that paprika. We love that.
And we got a nice one here from, it says, warning, not all runners are dry. And it's by someone called Minky Wilmer. Good old Minky Wilmer sent it in.
And we said this is a family show.
I don't know what it is. I asked my wife. My wife's called Molly Wilmot, right? So I thought, that's my wife taking the mickey. And I said to her, oh, nice, thanks for the review you put up on there. She goes, what? So thanks for that review you put up on there. She's like, I haven't put any review up there. So someone's is a Minky Wilmer and said,
okay.
The post says, warning, not all runners are dry. And it says, this is a funny, super informative, and impossible not to want to get on a bus the Domain is driving. So thanks for that.
Come to London. Come to London.
Minky. Isn't there like, what's the that one on Only Way is Essex.
Chelsea. It's made in Chelsea. One's called Minky. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Minky. So, yeah, thanks, Minky, for that. And all reviews are gratefully received. So, yeah. So I better go. I've got my mother-in-law over, and we're looking after my little baby, which is fun, little Greta. I've got some really good photos of her she was sitting down with her mum and looking really cute with a big smile on her face. And
You stuck her in your Let's Get Running t-shirt and stuff.
I've done that a few times, yeah. I haven't posted any yet. But it was brilliant because as I was taking the photo, she projectile vomited and I caught the exact moment. The only photo I've got is an exact moment of her spewing all over her mum. So, yeah, that's my favourite photo of the mum. Lovely baby spewing mum. But hey, yeah. Anyway, have a good weekend. Hopefully we'll post those runs and challenge each other to a nice 10K run. And get your age-graded performance of the week in. We want to see those. Email us.
Send the links. See who's got the most points.
Get us on Facebook.
Bring
the challenge. And the email, again, I'll just reiterate that. Get in touch at letsgetrunning.co.uk. And obviously we'll read out all of the entries that come in. Or just, again, on social if it's easier, our Facebook site, Twitter, or Instagram. Thanks. Lovely. Have a good week. Keep it real and all that. And we'll speak again soon. Cheers.
See ya. Bye.